Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. Great to have you here for another episode of the show. If you're a practice owner who's motivated and driven and you want to have more income from your practice or free up more time or indeed enjoy the journey that bit more, I'm going to encourage you to come along to the Savvy Dentist Facebook group, because in that group we've got some tools, some training and some techniques there to help you take your practice to the next level. Whatever your goals are, as I said, whether it's about earning more income or freeing up time or just enjoying that journey, there's going to be some things there that are going to really accelerate your progress towards your goal. So come and join us. All you need to do is look for the Savvy Dentist group on Facebook, and we'd love to welcome you there if you're a practice owner. So please do take the time to answer the questions, and once you've done that, we'll let you into the group. But for now, we're going to be having a conversation around about economic management in some uncertain times. And my guest today is Berris Sultry from Dental Innovations. And Berris has been around in business for over 25 years. He's seen lots of things, done lots of things. And we're going to be talking a lot about, you know, an integrated system around budgeting, making sure that we're managing our revenue, of course, but also managing our expenses so that we've got good cash flow off the back of that. And that's going to feed into a really systemized approach to, you know, stock management or inventory management and an integrated ordering system. And we're going to be talking about benchmarks and KPIs and where they fit into the picture, but also really looking at where the opportunities lie into the future. Because again, when you've been in business for 25 years, you get to see the trends, you get to see what's been and done, and you get to see where we're going as well. And Berris shares some great insights around that, so you can position yourself to capitalize on those future trends. This is a really fun and interesting interview. I hope you enjoy it as much as I enjoyed recording it. So without any further ado, here's Berris Sultry. Berris Sultry, welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. How are you going, mate?
Great, thanks, Jesse. Thank you very much for having me back on. I appreciate the opportunity.
Mate, it's good to have you here. And mate, we talk a lot throughout the year and at various different things, and it's always nice to catch up. I saw you at ADX recently. And mate, obviously you're part of Dental Innovations, or DI as it's affectionately known by shorthand. And yeah, clearly DI is a really integrated business that helps dentists with their budgeting, their ordering, their inventory, plus a whole lot of other things, so that, you know, the practice can grow and become more profitable, and you can really assist dentists in their day-to-day business. I wanted to ask you a little bit about, you know, what you're seeing at the moment. We're recording this in June 2022. What are you seeing? What are you hearing? How's it, you know, appearing at the coalface for you, mate?
Yeah, everybody's emerging post-COVID. I think that there's been certainly a bit of, you know, people have experienced a very good run from the backlog of treatment, which sort of COVID created in the lockdowns. But we sort of moved through that period now to your post-COVID economy. And there's probably, you know, practices are travelling pretty well from what we hear from our members. But obviously there's some clouds in the horizon which may be coming through. And that's, you know, your increasing mortgage rates, you know, and external pressures which are coming through, like inflation as well. So that may, you know, make some interesting times going forward, I think.
I've been thinking a lot about this, Berris. And, you know, one of the things I remember when I was a young dentist, when I was a graduate, I remember, you know, you could pretty much hang your shingle up, you'd be busy the next day, and realistically there was not a great need for dentists to have, you know, business skills, because the supply-demand equation was such that there was a shortage of dentists, and therefore, you know, there was no real need to have commercial acumen. But of course, we live in a different world now. We have many more dentists. We see competitive pressures. We're now seeing, as you say, some, you know, clouds gathering on the horizon. I wanted to ask you a little bit about, you know, the business acumen that you think dentists really need to be starting to acquire if they haven't already acquired it, or indeed, you know, level up if they, you know, have a baseline level of business acumen. Where do you see the skills needing to be developed for businesses?
But over that 25 years, there's certainly been a big change within the industry in terms of what's required from the dentists and the practice owners. As you mentioned before, when you know, back in the 25 years ago, you could simply start a practice and with minimal advertising, and the restrictions were a lot tighter back then as well to get up and running. Now, you know, you're heading into an environment which is very competitive. The island which is coming through quite strong at the moment is corporatization.
Yep.
And that is, you know, putting more pressure on independent practices to be competitive and have a much higher level of business acumen than previously required. So you're not only, you know, your clinical dentistry needs to be on point, but also all aspects of running a small business in a competitive environment also needs to be on point. So, you know, making sure your systems are in place, your marketing is getting the messages that you want, and building that, you know, patient base, making sure that that's still coming through the door and being serviced correctly as well. So there's many more hats that you have to wear as a practice owner and be confident in them to actually, you know, maintain your place in the industry.
And it's interesting because I was talking to a younger dentist the other day who had not really experienced anything other than, I guess, an upward economy. And, you know, I grew up in the 1990s when we had, you know, the recession of the 90s and, you know, the dot-com boom and bust and GFC and everything in between. And so obviously these sorts of times come and go, and it's a normal part of an economic cycle. And, you know, I think that it's good to be prepared, but I don't think there's a need to be panicked, but we just need to be prudent about how we run our practice and how we go about things and being conscious and mindful of that. And I guess that leads me to a conversation about cash flow and the need to be on point with our budgeting. We run a whole forecasting process with our clients. We want to make sure we know what our anticipated revenue is, where it's coming from, what our anticipated expenditures are, and making sure that we're, you know, keeping a close eye on those outgoings as well so that we can, you know, be prudent with our financial management. So I guess I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, I wanted to start our conversation, I guess, with the conversation around financial management for practice. And I know you guys have seen and done a lot of work in this space. And that's really where you have that entry point with your members. What are you seeing in that space, and what thoughts do you have about what constitutes good financial management?
Yeah, well, I certainly agree. It's sort of, now is the time to make sure that is an area that you're focusing on within the business. And having looking at both, you know, your cash flow, your projections, and also costs, making sure that they are tuned down, so you're managing them effectively as well. So it's looking at some of the KPIs within the business, and making sure you're meeting those and setting budgets, and not only for yourself, but making sure the team's on board as well and understand what they need to do to help you reach your goals. So it has to be a whole team approach to make sure that things are met.
Obviously, you work with practices and their teams. And if we are talking about a whole team approach, I'll ask you about the specifics around KPIs and benchmarks and all that sort of stuff in a second, but it's really an interesting concept about enrolling the team in this process. And it's a really, sometimes it's a challenge because, you know, from the practice owner's point of view, they're thinking, well, hang on, my team get paid irrespectively of how well the practice performs by and large, you know, unless they're a commissioned clinician. But otherwise, most people are on some form of salary or hourly rate. How do you see practice owners enrolling the team and getting them to care about the finances of the practice? What sort of strategies have you seen work, and where do you see perhaps practice owners coming a little bit unstuck?
There's a vested interest in the staff, you know, making sure that the business is successful, and engaging them, perhaps as siloed to their role and what's within their control to actually assist the practice be successful. So having individual KPIs for the business where they can have an influence actually to meet them for you, so collectively they're able to move forward. And there may be some at a high level sharing, you know, how the practice is traveling as a whole as well. So yeah, you don't have to disclose everything, but you can certainly engage them in terms of meeting KPIs and what you want to achieve as a business owner as well.
I think that's a really important thing, ladies and gents, if you're listening, is enrolling your team into this process, because as Barry said, they are, you know, they are vested in the success of the practice. You know, for them, if the practice is successful, then obviously they continue to have employment, but they also have the opportunity to, you know, earn more if the practice, you know, is earning well as well. But Beres, one of the things we did touch on there in that forecasting and projection process was really looking at the expenses and you know, looking at those outgoings that impact on the bottom line. And expenses are like small leaks, and if we don't take care of them, they turn into big leaks and big profit drains. Your area of expertise, I know, is in that consumable market and ordering and making sure that there's, you know, good stock control and inventory management. Before we get into inventory management per se, when it comes to ordering and being efficient and minimizing waste and not, you know, not kind of letting it go loosey-goosey, firstly, what mistakes do you see routinely that practice owners make, and what are the remedies to those mistakes?
Yeah, I think from a practice owner's perspective, sometimes they abdicate the role. And they don't keep a close to actually what's happening in the ordering aspect of it. And when you're looking at expenditure, sometimes in excess of $100,000 per annum for consumables and upwards, you know, it's a pretty major expense. So systemizing that process and having transparency around this, but more importantly, having accountability around that process is quite critical. And that can be done through KPIs, it can be done through budgeting, but also having a streamlined ordering process as well is quite critical. We see a lot of businesses at the moment sort of within the role, creating a role around ordering, where they will have a girl or a staff member, who are spending quite a lot of time shopping the market, trying to get the best deals. But, you know, it's a bit of a false economy in doing that in terms of the cost of that staff member. You're far more better having that energy put into getting a new patient through the door or booking in a crown or something like that. It can be the production side of things is far more rewarding as opposed to cost. You know, cost is certainly a key element and it can help you lift your profitability, but you don't want to have someone purely creating a role around that ordering aspect of it to try and save you a dollar.
Yeah, I mean, the dollar you save has probably cost you, you know, $15 in wages or whatever it is. I'm not sure what the metric is, but you're right, it's a false economy. And so having a systemized approach to ordering, being streamlined in what you do is going to be key. We have spoken a little bit about KPIs and of course, benchmarks. You know, when we're looking at what consumables cost and all the rest of it, what's your thoughts around a benchmark for consumables as a percentage of revenue? I've got my own thoughts around that, but I'd be keen to get your perspective and thoughts on what you see as a low range and a high range or even an intermediate range.
Yeah, so on average, I guess you'd say that a lot of practices are running between 7 to 10% of total revenue. Mm-hmm. A very well-run practice is looking at about 5%, but we have seen practices which are well above that, you know, tapping on the, you know, 14%. So it really is a range of practices depending on individual practice owner and how disciplined they are in that area.
So if we were to talk about the 5% practice versus the 14% practice, you know, you've spoken about the fact that in a high cost practice has been a degree of abdication. What else are the differences between those two practices? Because it's not like the 14% can't come down to 5%. So what's happening on a day-to-day basis that allows one practice to be run more efficiently in that regard than, say, another?
A lot of it comes down to systems and discipline. And that's part of what we've created is that solution for the process for our members. It's an element of what we do to help our members in the operation, total operation of a practice, is to provide an ordering solution for them, which takes them through the ordering process from ordering from multiple suppliers at one location through to budgeting, to report, to inventory control as well. So it's a holistic system. And that's sort of something you can put in place in a practice, and, you know, systemizing that process is really the key to it, making sure that there's a level of accountability within the practice as well to that ordering process.
And what does that accountability look like on a practical level?
That can be done to having someone take ownership of it.
Yep.
So they are responsible for the order, and if something goes wrong, then they're accountable.
Yep.
To also setting budgets for the team. So when they're ordering, they're accountable for budget. And that can be done, you know, in conjunction to actually helping you achieve KPI in that area. So you may want to bring it from, you know, 10% down to that 5% by, you know, setting a budget for the girls. There's other aspects to it as well, which can come down to simple things like standardisation of products within a practice. So that's quite a key thing as well, especially if you have multiple dentists working within a location. Standardising a lot of the products that they're using will actually make it a lot easier for ordering. But also, when it comes to wastage, you'll actually start minimising your wastage, which is another key element within the practice.
Yeah, look, mate, this is something you're speaking my love language when we're talking about standardisation. clearly, I need to get out more, but one of the things around that standardisation, if I had a dollar for every time I've heard someone say, well, I've got this bonding system for that, another bonding system for a different scenario, and then a third or a fourth or a fifth one for a variety of other different scenarios. And the risk is that you use them so infrequently that they go out of date. And of course, that then becomes, you know, money that goes in the bin, basically. And by standardising, you know, you're not, you know, having that wastage. And One of the things that I've always admired in terms of businesses, you know, is Southwest Airlines, and you mentioned Fiji Airlines to me offline, and yeah, Southwest Airlines is I think it's the world's most profitable airline. If they're not the most, they're one of. And they have one type of aircraft, which means one type of maintenance, one type of tools, one type of training for the cabin crew, one type of training for the flight deck, and so on and so forth. And their philosophy is that a plane on the ground doesn't make money. So they're always trying to get planes in the sky. And I guess what we're trying to get here is revenue, you know, efficiencies, but and turning over our stock. We're not wanting to have stock sit on our shelves too long, so we've got to have, you know, inventory days reduced. I know this is probably a question without notice, but typically how often would stock turn over if we're running an efficient practice? I know every single product's got its own life cycle and all the rest of it, but do you have any thoughts or any general guidance around inventory days and management of those?
Yeah, look, every practice will be different in terms of the procedures they're doing and the volume of stock that they're using. I guess when we look at it, we're looking at sort of trying to bring the ordering down to monthly pace and having enough stock based off your historical purchasing or procedures that you'll need for a month worth of operation, and carrying that amount of stock without carrying excess, and that sort of hones it down. It works in two ways. As you're not carrying an excessive stock, which sort of frees up your cash flow. You're eliminating potential for waste in terms of expiry dates.
Yep.
But it also brings that time of staff ordering down quite a lot. So rather than, you know, spending a day every week or doing it fortnightly, if you do it monthly, then you're minimizing your time. And that becomes achievable through systemization.
Yeah.
And benchmarking the practice.
So one of the systemization processes I know you're really passionate about is, you know, the whole inventory management system of, you know, how it's stored and so on. So I wanted to just get your thoughts around what effective inventory management looks like, you know, what sort of processes, whether it's scan in, scan out, all that sort of stuff. What does a well-run practice look like from an inventory management perspective?
Again, every practice you go into will have a version of what they're trying to achieve, and there's different ways to skin that. You know, what we've focused in Dental Innovation is trying to provide that solution for our members in terms of stock ordering through to being a holistic approach with inventory order control as well. So we've been in this space for quite a long time. We've had our stock ordering system up for 15 years, and through that we've evolved inventory control, which we've been doing for the last 12 months or so. So inventory control is driving, you know, a control of what's coming in and what's going out of the practice, knowing what you require for the operation of your practice and making sure that you have that required amount, so you're not running short. So having that accountability and control from the staff level, that's quite critical. It's that discipline that is required to maintain effective inventory control that makes everything work.
So if I've understood this correctly, mate, just to kind of join these dots together, then we're talking about, in general, it's good practice to be financially prudent. We get that. We also know that currently there's a couple of storm clouds on the horizon. So now's the time to get our financial house in order and examine some of these things. And of course, there's opportunities on the revenue side. And I think we should keep pursuing those and making sure that we're not shrinking into our shells, but you know, still being outward looking and outward facing in terms of our process of attracting patients and presenting cases. But equally, on the back end, we're going, well, hang on, let's minimize wastage. Let's get our ordering under control. We're not going to abdicate it. We're going to have a system in place. We're going to get our range norms back to that, you know, 7-ish% or even less if we can. And to do that, we're going to rationalize the stock that we hold, maybe, you know, streamline the number of bonds we have or the composites we have. And then from an inventory point of view, we've got to have a really accurate system which measures usage so that we can then go, well, I'm holding the appropriate amount of stock, no more, no less. And that gives us, you know, a digitized system that feeds into that. Have I pretty much kind of tied that into a bow? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's right, Jesse. It's sort of, you know, it starts from the receivable of the stock and having a system where you can actually scan the product in to say this is how much we've got and against what we require to make sure those figures are accurate. You know, we've developed the QR coding scanning so you can actually order from QR codes on that stock and having control of your stock room and quantities that then goes into the ordering system. The ordering system, again, using the figures that you populate can actually generate and let you know when you're running low on stock. You've sort of have reached your minimum stock requirement in the practice, and it can generate, you know, notification for you on that basis, which then can be placed through the online ordering as well with our partners. So there's a total process involved with it. And it also segues into the ordering and our relationship with our partners, where you're achieving savings on your consumable expenditure through, you know, our buying power as Dental Innovations as well. So that can really help bring down that cost.
Just to shift gears for a second, where do you see the opportunities arising over the next few years? Again, you've been around long enough to smell the winds of change, and you know you're able to spot and identify how the market's moving. Where do you see opportunities for dentists moving forward?
So there's certainly, in the context of some of the changes in the industry, you know, the corporatization is a big one. And maintaining that identity as an independent practice, I think, is quite critical. And there will be certainly a place always for independent practices. And letting your patient base know and be identified as the owner-operator of a practice, being part of the community, and generating, you know, canvassing that support for the practice in that area. There's evolving technology in the industry, and it's moving quite quickly. And some of the investing in it and looking at the technology which is coming through and seeing where it can be applied in your practice, you know, to assist you be more efficient, perhaps looking at new procedures. And that's going to be something I'd certainly, you know, invest time in looking and learning about too. Another good one, which is sort of, you know, if you look at what health practices travel well through the lockdowns, stuff like investing in clear aligner training and making that available for your practices as well. You know, investing in learning about those areas as well is quite good.
So, Beres, I agree with you. I think there's some wonderful opportunities out there. And I think one of the risks for practice owners is to get too negative when they start seeing some news headlines. And yeah, irrespective of what's happening out there, I'm a believer that we get to be in charge of our own economic destiny. We get to be in charge of the results that we create for ourselves. And what that means is, you know, having a support network around us is going to be critical, or, you know, in the work that you do moving forward. And, you know, certainly in the work that I do, and I know the work that you do, Beres, you know, creating networks of people that support one another, you know, tapping into peer groups, all of those sorts of things are really important. And obviously you guys figured that out some time ago. So tell me, what's your thinking around communities? What's your thinking around peer groups? What's your thinking around, you know, collectively working together for the betterment of all?
Yeah, absolutely. It is a critical thing, Jesse. And certainly we saw that come to the fore during the lockdowns, where a very challenging time for all business owners in terms of it was very isolating and it's a lot happening very quickly. That's where we thought within our community, the self-help element come through of practice owners sharing ideas, sharing resources and information was critical for a lot of these guys to move through that period, you know, at the best that they could. So it's always been one of the core philosophies of Dental Innovations, and how Dental Innovations was created was on that concept of dentists working together, being proactive in their own industry, but also sharing knowledge and ideas to help each other. And that's quite a critical element, I think, for any business, really. Dentistry in particular can be quite isolating as a practice owner, and you're very much focused on production and the management of your own practice. But being able to talk to other business owners about the challenges you may be encountering is quite critical, and it becomes a perpetual sort of self-help network, which is quite a little bit intangible, but quite invaluable in terms of a business owner. So you're not seeing things in isolation. You don't see that the sky is falling in when it's not. And it keeps things in perspective. You know, sharing the knowledge that you have as well with other practice owners and passing that knowledge, it can help a lot of people make a lot of, you know, avoid a lot of mistakes.
Yeah, I'm a real believer with that as well, mate. And our work is around that space as well. And I'm a believer that, you know, none of us is as smart as all of us. And I think that when we put good people together, smart people together, and let them exchange ideas, I think, you know, good things happen. And I think that that's a really valuable resource for anyone in business, but particularly dental practice owners who, as you quite rightly point out, sometimes feel that degree of isolation, or in fact, even sometimes a bit of trepidation to ask the question, because in some of the forums, or indeed when I remember going to various dental meetings, there's a lot of bravado and a lot of, you know, got it all together kind of attitude going on. And many people did, and that's great. But for those people who didn't feel as confident. It was perhaps a little intimidating to ask their question in that environment. I think it's nice to have that space where you can ask the question, get the support, get the answers that you need without feeling like the dunce in the class. And yeah, it's nice that you guys do that. So, mate, what I really wanted to round out our conversation with, Paris, is I've got a couple of things I wanted to ask you. The first thing is I wanted to ask you about, you know, Beres's keys to success in business, because you guys have been in business for 25 years and that's no small achievement. And that's longer than probably most of the people listening to this podcast. And so clearly along the way, you would have learned some things, probably, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but probably had your own boo-boos and stubbed toes along the way. I certainly have had those, so I'll say that on behalf of both of us. So I'm curious to ask, if you were talking to a young practice owner today who was bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and frankly a bit green, what would be, you know, the top two or three or how many keys for success that you think would be really useful for a practice owner to have under their belt?
I think one of the critical things is to seek help, seek community. You know, by that collective learning, you can actually avoid a lot of the pitfalls in growing a small business. Yeah. Absolutely. And guys who have made the mistakes are more than happy to tell you about them and how to avoid them, simply because of the pain they might have gone through.
Yeah.
So tapping into that peer base is quite critical, and being selective in that as well. So, you know, there's lots of people trying to encourage to join their group or to subscribe to their business, but be selective in who you're seeking advice from. The other one too is just continuing education, continual evolution. You know, we've been in business for 25 years, but we don't think that we have reached a destination. We're constantly evolving and what we're doing, constantly adapting to the needs of our members, but also the market as well to find solutions. So I think that's quite a critical element, is being adaptive to the needs of your customer base, but also the environment that you're in as well. So, yeah, it's interesting if you say we've been in business 25 years, we don't feel that we have been, because we're constantly evolving in our period. Yeah, so it's certainly not an end destination.
The ability to adapt to changing circumstances is going to be key. And there's a great, everyone thinks that Charles Darwin's thing is about survival of the fittest, but really, if you read into that a bit further, it's about the ability to adapt and to change with the times is going to be a key to survival. And of course, not just surviving, but thriving and creating a great practice and a great life and all the things that come with it. And it is an enjoyable journey as well, because I think you articulated earlier in the conversation, there's constant growth, constant development on a personal level as much as on a business level. And that's a fun journey. So for all the younger practice owners out there, it's exciting and I hope you enjoy it as much as we do. Beres, any last tips around that? But I've got one last question I want to ask you. But if you've got any last pearls of wisdom to share before I ask you my very important question last of all.
The main thing, I guess, in dentistry is owning and operating your own practice can be exceptionally rewarding, both personally to interest and development, but also financially. And the value of actually being an independent practice owner in this environment is, you know, don't get distracted by or put off by the corporatization of it. There's going to be a solid place for independent practices. I guess that's where we fit into the industry. We're supporting independent practice owners in that environment. You know, creating the economies of scales and support networks actually help you succeed in that area and just shortcutting some of those learning processes, you know, working hand in glove with the industry and just trying to make that practice and that journey of practice ownership a lot easier for everybody.
All right, mate. So we need a bit of a drum roll. I'm going to see if I've got this little machine here. Oh, no, I've got the wrong sound effect. Oh, man. There we go. I've got my boom tish sound effect going. Who are the, you know, three or four people you'd invite around to your house for a barbecue and what would you want to learn?
Oh, that's a very interesting one, Jesse.
Yeah, sorry, question without notice.
I've been in lockdown too long. having a social gathering is beyond my...
You're in Melbourne, mate. I know. It probably comes with a degree of anxiety getting back into the social scene.
Yeah, that's right. As long as they're socially distanced, that's all right.
Yeah.
Especially because we're from... look, I certainly would, you know, I'd probably go with some of the big guns, people like your Warren Buffett's, in terms of, you know, his perspective on investment and wealth creation. You can't beat some of the entrepreneurs, Richard Branson, I think, as well. just for that adaptation and entrepreneurial aspect of it as well. So I'd probably go with some of the big guns like that.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, I reckon that'd be a good barbecue to be at, and I reckon I'd love to be a fly on the wall to hear Branson and Buffett have a bit of a chat. I think that'd be quite fun.
You're invited, Jesse.
Thank you, mate. I'll count myself in. I just automatically invited myself, mate, just so you know. I was there already. I'll cook the snags, mate. I'll do the snags for you. Okay. Hey, Barris, as always, mate, it's always fun to talk to you, and what I always appreciate about talking to you, Barris, is you're always considered and thoughtful. You're not a off-the-cuff, shoot-from-the-hip kind of guy, and I really appreciate that, because everything that you talk about is steeped in experience, steeped in best practice. And I really think that if people listen to this podcast, go back and listen to what Barris has had to say a few times, you'll get some real pearls of wisdom that are going to make a big difference to your practice. So, mate, I just want to say thank you from all of us here at Savvy Dentist for coming on, and hopefully we can do it again soon.
Yeah, look forward to it, Jesse. Thank you very much, mate. And again, I appreciate the opportunity to have a chat with you. It's always good fun.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.